I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Democratic National Convention in Chicago. This is Democracy Now!, War, Peace, and the Presidency, breaking with convention.
I encourage people to protest because it needs to be made clear that this genocide that has been happening, that is in month 10, is not acceptable. And if those within the party cannot make it clear to the administration, then those in the street need to make it clear.
Thousands of protesters are converging on Chicago for the DNC to call for an end to U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza, an end to economic injustice, support for reproductive rights, and more. We'll be joined by the spokesperson for the coalition to march on the DNC. Then we look back at the 1968 DNC here in Chicago, when police violently attacked protesters who are calling for an end to the war in Vietnam.
What we are battling for is not simply for an end to the war in Vietnam or to move these racist dogs out of the black community. We are beginning to fight for our own survival.
We'll be joined by longtime Chicago activist Bill Ayers. He was arrested during the 68 DNC protests when he was a member of Students for a Democratic Society. Juan Gonzalez was also in Chicago in the streets in 68. He'll be talking about his experiences as well. And hundreds gathered here in Chicago last night to honor civil rights icon Reverend Jesse Jackson, founder of the Rainbow Push Coalition. We'll hear the Reverend Al Sharpton.
Kamala Harris is going to be nominated. Starts right in this building. Starts right with this man. It has been a long journey, but the one that brought us this far was Jesse Lewis Jackson.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. This is War, Peace, and the Presidency. We are breaking with convention. I'm Amy Goodman. Thousands of delegates and elected officials have descended on Chicago as the Democratic National Convention kicks off today. The four-day convention comes 1 month after President Biden ended his bid for re-election. Vice President Kamala Harris secured the Democratic presidential nomination in a virtual roll call earlier this month and is expected to again formally accept the party's nomination when she addresses the convention on Thursday night. Dozens of delegates with the Uncommitted Movement are also in Chicago as they continue to pressure Harris to halt U.S. military support for Israel's war on Gaza. The delegates represent states where some 700,000 people cast uncommitted votes during primaries to protest Democrats' pro-Israel policies. For the first time ever, the DNC is hosting a panel on Palestinian human rights. The uncommitted delegation welcomed the move, but they're also continuing to request that Dr. Tanya Hashhassan, who's volunteered in Gaza, be permitted to address the convention from the stage. On Sunday, hundreds of protesters took to the streets of Chicago saying they'll disrupt the DNC until Democrats listen to their demands. This is Kshama Savant, co-founder of Worker Strike Back and former socialist Seattle city council member.
The possibility of Trump 2.0 is only a reality because of the many betrayals by the Biden-Harris administration. Biden and Harris, both as president and as vice president, and the Democratic Party as a whole, they broke their promise for a $15 an hour minimum wage. They blocked the railroad worker strike, which is possibly the one of the most anti-worker, anti-union actions that can be taken by politicians. And so, in other words, both the Democratic and Republican parties are anti-worker, and they are both pro-war.
Meanwhile, Chicago's Democratic Mayor Brandon Johnson in a recent interview called Israel's war a genocide, saying, quote, what's happening right now is not only egregious, it is genocidal. We have to acknowledge and name it for what it is and have the moral courage to exercise our authority, the Chicago mayor said. We'll have more from the DNC after headlines. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's in Israel where he warned ongoing ceasefire talks may be the last chance to free Hamas hostages as he spoke from Tel Aviv earlier today. Blinken added, quote, it's also time to make sure that no one takes any steps that could derail this process, unquote. Inside Gaza, displaced Palestinians in Khan Yunis responded to Blinken's latest visit.
Today in the Gaza Strip, we are suffering from the Americans and international community ganging up on us without mercy on us. As I said, this visit is as usual to check on Israel and provide it with arms and logistic matters to continue the war of extermination on the Gaza Strip. There will be no changes. We are very pessimistic about this visit.
Israel's slaughter continues throughout the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military is pushing further into central Deir al-Balah as Gazans are now being crowded into just 10% of the besieged territory. On Saturday, an Israeli airstrike in Deir al-Balah killed at least 18 members of the same family, including 11 siblings aged between 2 years old and 22. On Sunday, another attack in the same region killed more Palestinian children. Mohammed Awad Khattab said six of his grandchildren were killed as they slept along with their mother, his daughter, who worked for the United Nations.
My daughter had been struggling to have children for years. She had them through IVF. Four of the children were quadruplets. The eldest son and the youngest daughter, who was only a year and a half old, were also killed. What wrong did these innocent children do? Were they posing any danger to Israel? Were they carrying arms?
UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, is marking World Humanitarian Day today by honoring its 207 staff members who've been killed by Israel since October 7th. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is calling for a polio pause to conduct an urgent vaccination campaign inside Gaza after health authorities confirmed a 10-month-old infant had contracted the highly contagious disease.
Let's be clear. The ultimate vaccine for polio is peace and an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. But in any case, a polio pause is a must. It is impossible to conduct a polio vaccination campaign with war raging all over.
The 10-month-old baby is Gaza's first known case of polio in a quarter of a century. In Israel, relatives of hostages held in Gaza rallied in Tel Aviv this weekend ahead of Tony Blinken's visit. This is Lee Siegel, whose brother is one of the remaining hostages.
We are broken. We are sad. We are tired. We wake up in the morning thinking about the hostages. Maybe this will be the day when they come home. We go to sleep every night thinking tomorrow morning we will wake up to a better day. This morning was not a better day. True, negotiations are ongoing. Until the hostages are home, negotiations mean nothing.
Meanwhile, Hamas and the Islamic Jihad say they're responsible for an explosion in a truck in Tel Aviv Sunday evening. The blast killed one person believed to be the detonator of the explosive, the suicide bomber. Regional tensions remain high amidst ongoing attacks around the Israel-Lebanon border. Lebanese state media reported an Israeli strike in the south of the country killed at least 10 Syrian nationals Saturday, including two children. This is a witness of the attack.
Honestly, a number of workers were martyred on the site, including the janitor, along with his wife and two children. With them were a number of workers who also lived in the same building. They are all Syrians. This is a civil establishment that works in metal trades for hangars, false ceilings, and homes, and has nothing to do with military things at all.
Meanwhile, Israeli forces earlier today raided the town of Hula in southern Lebanon, according to local reports. In Sudan, a cholera outbreak has killed over 300 people, according to the World Health Organization. The highly contagious infection transmitted through contaminated food or water can cause severe diarrhea and dehydration. Sudan is facing a catastrophic humanitarian situation, with famine declared in a camp in North Darfur and over 10 million displaced since the civil war erupted last April. This is Lenny Kensley of the World Food Program.
It is the world's largest hunger crisis. 25.6 million people are in acute hunger, are facing acute hunger. That's 54% of the population. So basically that means one in two Sudanese is not able to put a basic meal on their plate every day, are struggling every day just to eat. Of those, around 755,000 people are in the highest stage of food insecurity, catastrophic hunger, which basically means they've run out of all options and are surviving in whatever way they can, eating leaves off trees, eating grass.
The Sudanese government is sending a delegation to Cairo for talks with U.S. and Egyptian officials after failing to attend peace talks in Geneva last week. The talks in Egypt will reportedly be restricted to discussing the implementation of last year's Jeddah agreement, which is supposed to uphold humanitarian protections during the bloody conflict. Back in the United States, Kamala Harris unveiled her economic policy agenda during a campaign speech in Raleigh, North Carolina, Friday.
As president, I will be laser focused on creating opportunities for the middle class that advance their economic security, stability, and dignity. Together, we will build what I call an opportunity economy.
Harris's plan includes bringing down the cost of housing, child care, and health care. The Democratic nominee said she'll restore and expand child tax credits, cancel medical debt, cap the cost of drugs, ban price gouging on groceries, and go after predatory corporate landlords, among other things. In other election news, Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein announced historian and Professor Butch Ware as her running mate. Jill Stein, who also ran on the Green Party ticket in 2012 and 16, has made a Gaza ceasefire one of the main pillars of her platform. In a post announcing her VP pick, Stein wrote, quote, "This is truly a historic ticket, bringing together a Jewish woman and a black Muslim man against genocide, endless war, climate collapse, and rampant injustice, and for an economy that works for working people, a livable future for our children, and an America and a world that works for all of us," she said. Stein and Butch Ware held a virtual press conference Saturday.
AIPAC and the arms manufacturers have bought and paid for both of these parties. So, of course, they cannot agree to an arms embargo because those checks have already been cashed, right? They have their projections of all of the future income off of the endless future war.
And in health news, Philippines is the latest country to report a new case of Mpox. Authorities say the 33-year-old Filipino patient came from Manila, had no history of foreign travel. Last week, the World Health Organization declared Mpox a global public health emergency after an outbreak spread from the Democratic Republic of Congo to a dozen neighboring countries. Sweden and Pakistan have since reported cases as well. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency. We're breaking with convention. When we come back, we'll talk about the protests planned for the streets of Chicago. Stay with us.
Said Bobby must be set free. Automatic. Said I'm free. They say that he killed a brother. Yeah, but this we know it just can't be. saying, Bobby must be set free.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. We're broadcasting from the studios of CanTV here in New York. I'm Amy Goodman, joined by Juan Gonzalez for the first time in 4.5 years since before the pandemic. And then Juan moved to Chicago, where we are right now. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and good to be back. I'm Juan Gonzalez. The Democratic National Convention kicks off today here in Chicago. The 4-day convention will culminate on Thursday with Vice President Kamala Harris accepting the Democratic nomination for president. We'll be bringing you coverage all week from the suites to the streets to the convention floor. While Harris has energized the Democratic Party following President Biden's decision to pull out of the race last month, the issues around the election have not changed, from economic injustice to reproductive rights to U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. And thousands of protesters are converging on Chicago to make their voices heard. In addition to the protests on the streets, inside the convention, at least 30 pro-Palestinian delegates are representing the uncommitted movement and are advocating an anti-war agenda to push for an end to U.S. arms sales to Israel.
Over the course of the week, there are at least 6 major protests planned. The demonstrations kicked off on Sunday on the eve of the convention with the March for Bodies Outside Unjust Laws, which was organized by a coalition of different activist groups to demand action on reproductive rights, LGBTQ plus rights, and for an end to the war on Gaza. The largest group, the Coalition to March on D.C., has planned demonstrations on the first and last days of the convention with a major protest planned for today. Activists sued Chicago earlier this year, saying restrictions over where they can demonstrate violate their constitutional rights. For more, we're joined here in Chicago by Hatem Abudeya. He's the spokesperson for the Coalition to March on the Democratic National Convention and national chair of the U.S. Palestinian Community Network. He was born here in Chicago as a longtime organizer in the Palestinian community. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
If you can start off by talking about what are the plans today?
So the plans today are relatively simple. We're going to start with a launch with a press conference at 10 a.m.
And then at 12 noon on the dot, hopefully, we will start our program from a stage at Union Park. Historical Union Park, where in 2006, if you remember, the Sensenbrenner bill, the anti-immigrant bill, an explosion of immigrant rights sentiment in this country. 500,000 people were in Chicago on March 10th of 2006 in that very park. So we're really proud and honored to be there for this protest today.
And could you talk about the difficulty you've had in terms of arranging permits and the negotiations that went back and forth with police and the city?
Yeah, we had a really, really hard time with the law department at the city of Chicago. Very conservative, very reactionary. They did not negotiate in good faith with us. They made some promises that they reneged on. And originally, when they denied three of the organizations within the Coalition of March on the DNC, when they denied their permits, they tried to bury us 4 miles away on Columbus Drive. We rejected that, of course, immediately, and we sued in federal court saying that if we were not within sight and sound of the United Center, the Convention Center, that they would be violating our First Amendment rights. So then my organization, USPCN, filed the fourth permit application. They rejected that as well, but they recognized that they better put us within sight and sound, and they did.
And there was some intercession by the mayor himself on some of this. Could you talk about that?
So listen, I think the mayor from day one has said that he believes in the right of people to protest. He believes in the First Amendment right of everyone to protest. He talked about how he came to City Hall because of the protest movement, because of the Black Liberation Movement that he was a part of. And he also many times talked about the relationship between the Black Liberation Movement and Palestine liberation. So he broke the tie in the city council to pass a ceasefire resolution, the biggest city in the entire country that has done that. So we see that, Brandon Johnson has been an ally to oppressed communities generally, definitely an ally to the Palestinian community in Chicago and beyond, and we're proud to have that relationship.
It's very interesting what he said in a recent interview. This is the mayor of Chicago saying what's happening right now is not only egregious, it's genocidal. We have to acknowledge and name it for what it is and have the moral courage to exercise our authority. And if you can talk about not only that, but the fact today, and do you think the pressure you have all brought for these protests to be seen and heard has led to another first ever? You have the DNC hosting a panel on Palestinian human rights today at 3 o'clock, which will be probably in the midst of your protest. The leaders and among those who will be speaking will be the heads of the Uncommitted Movement and Dr. Tanya Hashhasan, which they're still pushing for her to actually address the convention from the stage.
And that's a public panel that's happening in the convention center. I hadn't even heard that. I have to shout out to my colleague. When we were in our press conference yesterday, I got the quote in Mother Jones, and I presented it to the media gaggle there as well. It was a powerful quote from the mayor. Again, an example of how he's really from the movement, and I think it's very, very powerful also that there's a panel in there. I believe that the action outside is what the world will be watching. People are talking about the excitement of, Kamala Harris going to the top of the ticket. But I think the excitement today and this week is going to be outside. We've got almost 300 organizations that have joined the Coalition of March on the DNC. Palestine is at the center. After October, the coalition made a shift and recognized that we had to call for a stop to U.S. aid to Israel and a stop to the genocide. But at the same time, of course, we're still addressing all the other issues that we initiated this coalition to do. Reproductive rights, women's rights, workers' rights, LGBTQ rights, the Black Liberation Movement, immigrant rights. All of those issues are going to be addressed. They're going to be addressed from the stage. They're going to be addressed in the posters and in the banners and in the puppets. It's going to be an incredible sight. Diverse children and seniors, people of all different physical abilities, people of all different immigration statuses. And the powerful element of it is the fact that all of those forces and all of those communities are standing up very publicly and very proudly saying free Palestine and U.S. aid to Israel. For that to happen and for the entire world to be watching it is going to be a really, really powerful moment.
And could you talk for those people around the country who are not familiar with the size and the influence of the Palestinian community here in Chicago?
Yeah, we believe that there's approximately 80,000 Palestinians that live in greater Chicago. We think there's about 250,000 Arabs in the entire state. I believe we're very influential. I believe we did an incredible job of helping to win the ceasefire resolution with our allies, mostly Black and Latino city council members, and of course the mayor breaking this high. So it is the largest community in the United States. And I think that is obviously significant. The other thing is, on Wednesday at 3:30, the Chicago Coalition for Justice in Palestine, of which USPCN is also a member and a leader, will be organizing a protest. That coalition locally has organized over 50 protests since October. And clearly, Chicago is the hub of the Palestinian community in the United States.
I mean, isn't the concentration of Palestinian Americans in Chicago is the largest concentration of Palestinian Americans in the country? It's called Little Palestine.
It is. It is, yeah. And it's the largest community. We believe it's the largest community in the entire world outside of the Arab world.
I wanted to ask you, you've been quoted as saying that Palestine is this generation's Vietnam War. Did you talk about that, the similarities and the limits of that comparison?
Yeah, listen, I think that obviously there are no U.S. boots on the ground except for the advisors and the CIA and the others that are working directly with the Israelis to repress the Palestinians. But it is a U.S. war, and I think the entire world recognizes that. You know, Biden could have turned off that tap of funding and weapons from day one if he wanted to. If he wanted to stop this genocide, he could have stopped it. He could stop it today. So it is a U.S. war. It's recognized across the world as a U.S. war. And the way that the rest of the world has responded to it reminds me a lot of the way the world responded to the Vietnam War, saying we have to stop these attacks on the people of Vietnam. The other comparison is that the Vietnamese lost 2 million beautiful souls in that battle to defeat U.S. imperialism and to rid themselves of colonialism. In Algeria, the Algerians lost 1 million to get their independence and to boot the French colonialists out of there. And so we recognize that there have been 40,000 Palestinians who have been killed, maybe 10,000 still under the rubble, 100,000 injured, 2 million displaced. But we look at the history and we think about Vietnam and Algeria and we say we are on the path to liberation. And if it takes 40,000 martyrs, it's hard to say this. It's hard to watch every day, 24/7, on our hands, a genocide in real time. But we know that this will lead to the liberation of Palestine, and the liberation of Palestine will lead to the liberation of all the Arab masses in the Arab world. So we are supporting our people in Palestine. We recognize that they are incredibly strong and steadfast in resisting the Israeli occupation and colonization and this brutal genocide, and the rest of the world is with them. They know that. We just have to battle the Democratic Party and Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, because those are the only people who are not with the Palestinians in this world.
You were also in Milwaukee for the Republican convention. Could you talk about what happened there?
Yeah, I was there, and we get questioned all the time. Well, how come you're not protesting the Republicans? Well, we did protest the Republicans. Well, how come this one is going to be a lot bigger, and why are you putting more resources here? And I said, that's not necessarily the truth. If the Republicans were in power and the Republicans had the presidency, then the event of the season would have been Milwaukee and the RNC. But the reality is it's Joe Biden's war. It's the Democratic Party's war, and Biden and Harris and Blinken especially, and, you know, Jeffries and Schumer and Pelosi and all of them, the top the top leaders of the Democratic Party are complicit. And that's why we're protesting the DNC, and that's why there's going to be thousands, if not tens of thousands, in the streets this week.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us, Hatem Abudaya. You mentioned Vietnam. We're going to go back to 1968 here in the streets of Chicago. Hatem is spokesperson for the Coalition to March on the Democratic National Convention and national chair of the U.S.-Palestinian Community Network. Born in Chicago, longtime organizer in the Palestinian community. When we come back, we look back at the 1968 DNC, when police violently attacked protesters who were calling for an end to the war in Vietnam. We'll be joined by longtime Chicago activist Bill Ayers, who was arrested then as a member of Students for a Democratic Society, and our own Juan Gonzalez in the streets in 1968